Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
Don't you want to have a beta, please, please. And but me, no, because I can't do a single normal teenage thing in this house, right?
Come on, beta, you're not normal.
Oh!
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 411 for the week of June 13th, 2022. I am poorly padded package from Nani David T. Cole, and I'm here with volleyball bully Tara Ariano.
Or volley bully, if you will.
And ninth place Captain Marvel cosplay contestant, Kate Sanchez.
I thought that I could get a little bit higher, but I'm fine with nine. Nine out of nine is good.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. You may have noticed in the intro, one of our usual names was missing, Sarah.
Finally kicked her out.
Sarah has been fired. Just kidding. The only person who gets fired on this podcast is Dave. Sarah is not well. COVID has finally come for her, so she is taking this day off. We hope to get her back in the saddle as soon as she is feeling up to it, of course. We wish her luck and quick healing.
Wish her luck.
We wish her quick healing. We are here, in fact, to talk about Ms. Marvel, and joining us, you've heard her on this podcast before. She's a writer and podcaster. It's Kate Sanchez.
Kate Sanchez, welcome
Hi.
Back.
Hey.
Yay!
Welcome back.
Super glad to be here.
We're thrilled to have you to talk about Ms. Marvel, in which Kamala Khan, Iman Vellani, is a 16-year-old Pakistani-American living in Jersey City with her parents and her older brother. She seems mostly to be ignored at school, except by her two best friends, Bruno Mantlance and Nakia Yasmin Fletcher. She's also a cartoonist and animator whose YouTube clips seem mostly to revolve around the Avengers. Her fandom is primarily focused on Captain Marvel, whom Kamala plans to honor with a costume at the upcoming AvengerCon, if her parents let her go. But her parents are very protective, including of an ornate bangle that Kamala's grandmother mails to the house and which Kamala's mom orders sent up to the attic immediately. But you'll never guess what happens when Kamala takes it out and puts it on, unless you've never seen a superhero TV show or movie before. Kate, who is fancy, also got screeners, so she has seen more of it than the rest of us have. Kate, let's do the Chen check-in. Should our listeners watch Ms. Marvel?
Yes.
Okay. Dave?
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I did, too. I thought it was cute. And I'm a tough audience when it comes to Marvel stuff, as people know. So let's get into the reasons. Kate, the show situates us in Kamala's aesthetic right away. We see her animations of the Avengers characters in the cold open segment. What did you think of this animation's look and feel and what it told us about this character before we even see her?
I mean, I think it was one of the best ways to introduce us to who Kamala is on the inside and understand how she thinks and how she sees the world. Mm-hmm. And I thought that's what the series had to nail for me, because it didn't nail a lot of other things. I also wrote, my master's thesis on Kamala Khan, and I was doing ethnographic work for my dissertation about Kamala Khan. So I have many bones to pick, none of which are the animations and her fandom.
Okay, well, tell us, what are your bones? You're the expert.
The big thing is really how they packaged a lot of her ethnic identity, how they packaged a lot of Islam for, like, consumption by people. It's very white-gazy. And then also the changing of the powers, the substantial changing of the powers, it really kind of messes with one of the core themes of Ms. Marvel in general. So that has been my biggest issue, but I've been trying to at least detach myself and let the series just do its own work, because it is something different. And I'm in love with what Iman brings to the role, because it at least nails who she is, right? So,
okay. Dave, same question, since you're more of a comic book guy than me.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not as much of a comic book guy as Kate, so I'm right in the middle. I thought the intro was a great recap, not only as an introduction to where she is as a teenager in America, but also like it was served as a decent recap to where we are with Captain Marvel and where that character is in the universe, which is I'll help you once in a while. Bye. Seems to be like what they're painting it as. And which is, I think, fair. You know, she apparently is not only Earth's superhero, she is the universe's galaxy superhero. Mm-hmm. So she's a busy person. She's got a lot of things on her busy calc. But I thought the intro was fun. I thought all of the visual shorthand in this show, although, like, if you put it all on paper and list all the, like, cute little things they do, it gets to the point where it's approaching, like, twee overload. You know, we have the intro, we have communicating what they're doing on their phones via things in the environment, such as neon signs, road markings, and that kind of stuff. There's a whole sequence where later in the show she's laying out her plan to get to Avenger Con, and as they're doing that, talking about the costume, all the murals in the neighborhood they're biking through, you know, it's all animated and stuff. I thought that all was great. It was very Into the Spider-Verse sort of style. I feel like they took a page from that and put it here to good effect. It was sort of like half that and half some of the Spider-Man Marvel movie credit sequence sort of vibe to it. I enjoyed all of that. I thought it was fine. I felt like they stopped just before I was going, like, all right, I've had enough. It's too sweet. It's too sweet. Where we are in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is interesting because now we have a show that is about the meta fandom of the Marvel Cinematic Universe inside the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah. Right.
And it's interesting just from like a logistical point of view. Like, I still don't understand who's running the con in this universe. Is it just like the equivalent of people getting together in our world who like, say, vampires? And it's not like, it's not the Twilight Con. It's just like, do you like bloodsuckers? Here's the con for you. It's all like unlicensed.
With the size of like everything there, I feel like it has to be an official something.
I agree. It seemed very slick. So I feel like there was some good money behind it. But whose money? It's like, is this the, what's the company from Loki? A Roxxon or whatever it is? Like, I feel like maybe they got their hands in it. Like, it feels like something in the universe that some evil corporation would co-opt to get money from, you know, the stupid kids of the Earth, whatever version of Earth this is.
Yeah, I appreciated that there was an effort to make it fun. Like, this does feel like it's pitched more to kids than some of the other ones are. I mean, but to a degree, they're all pitched to kids because it's Disney Plus.
Not only fun, and of course, we've only seen the first episode, but I love the scope of the show, at least so far, which is small, personal neighborhood. It has a very Spider-Man vibe to it, or at least, like, you know, early Spider-Man.
Well, and Disney did say explicitly, this is for teenagers. Mm-hmm. They're not targeting an adult audience with this series.
Yeah. And it's cute in the way that like teen romance-y, teen adventure shows are. And so that felt right to me. And in terms of the text, I see Dave's point, but it reminds me of when the first season of Sherlock dropped and everyone was like, oh my God, it's so cool how they show text on screen. And now it's like, that's such old hat. Every show does that.
I watch enough K-drama to just be very happy that I'm seeing text on stream because they do that a lot. They animate a lot of the text that you see and a lot of the emotions that you see.
Yeah.
I like it.
I'll also note that Kamala's version of Captain Marvel looks as queer as the character is only coded to be in her actual movie. Like, she, in that animation, she looks like, the hair is very short. The arms are very big. It seems like there's something going on there. I originally had in my notes that Kamala is the only Zoomer who gives a shit about getting her driver's license in our present day, since apparently that's not something kids that really care about anymore, I hear. But the show establishes that although she and Bruno aren't exactly struggling, they're also not rich enough to be able to, you know, take ride shares wherever they want to go. And I appreciated that, like, making story out of not only going somewhere that your parents have said you can't, which is a teen show staple, but also figuring out how to get there on time and when you don't have unlimited funds. It's like, took me back to my own youth. It is also a counter to what we saw in the Hawkeye show where, like, Kate Bishop is, you know, she's kind of slumming as a not rich person, but she really is actually rich. What did you think about those aspects of the show, Kate?
I really liked it. I think the one thing that the show does really well is it really builds out their life. Like, as much as we're building out a superhero show, a lot of this feels very slice of lifey in a way that works for that audience. And I think that that's something that I'm looking forward to see more of, because it's those bits that make Kamala such a great character in the superhero piece, because her first volume, actually her first two volumes, are very, very situated with her familial situation. It's very situated around who she is and her learning how to be okay with who she is and her and the relationships around her. And that's what makes her special. Not so much her powers. It's like getting into the mind of this kid mm-hmm. and realizing, oh, it isn't as straightforward as you may think. And I think that that is what this show is nailing. It's like a young YA, like it's hitting that aesthetic. It's hitting those plot points. And I appreciate it for that mm-hmm. because I think Disney does really well when it embraces a genre. And I think if we look at that, like YA high school drama, like that's what this I feel is leaning towards.
Yeah. It felt like a very true detail that Kamala's mother is partly annoyed that failing her test means she's not going to be able to help out with family household errands because as someone who was the older sibling and had to do that a lot, did all the family grocery shopping as soon as I was old enough to drive the car. That felt real to me.
Yeah.
Dave, any thoughts about the car?
I was so excited to get my driver's license that I really like. There's a lot of things that divide generations, of course, but just hearing that kids today have options beyond as the second you hit 16, you take your driver's test so you can have a car. Car equals freedom. Yep, freedom equals growing up. Like, there's so much riding on a driver's license back when I was 16 mm-hmm. that I find it totally foreign, even though I know the mechanics of why kids don't need a driver's license per se. Not only they can get around in other people's cars, but also they can contact people much easier now.
Yeah.
And do a lot of the stuff that we would go over to somebody's house for. Like, you don't necessarily have to be face-to-face.
Right.
But it's just such a, like, a cultural difference that I always aghast at.
I never realized that it was a thing that people didn't care about getting their driver. I got mine when I was 14. Like, my parents filled out a hardship license. Shit. Well, they filled out the hardship license because I had to work. Like, right. We needed more money in the house. Mm-hmm. And so it was one of those, like, a driver's license for me wasn't, like, freedom. It was right. you're gonna use the jalopy that doesn't have working air conditioner and you're not gonna take the highway because even though you got your license, I don't trust you on the highway.
yeah.
So now you're gonna drive 45 minutes to work instead of 20 mm-hmm. and you're going to bring income into this household.
Right.
And so I definitely think to your point, Tara, like her mom just like being like, but you were supposed to do errands. Yeah. You were supposed to help me.
Yes.
Like that was something I think really landed. Because I think that when it comes to wealth and class in the MCU, it's really badly handled.
Yes,
like,
I agree.
You can't tell anything. Like, Spider-Man is supposed to be a poor kid. He's mm-hmm. he's not. Yeah. For many different reasons in the MCU. And I think getting to see into Kamala's, like, she isn't poor, but they're a working class family. They're mm-hmm. a family that has to have their kids chip in and help out with things. And I think that that is a perspective that has been sorely missing from the hero universe, especially for those street level type areas.
And when they do try to do it, it's such in a hand wavy way, like the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, like mm-hmm. tried to get into it. And they're like one scene at the bank loan. And then there's just like, that's it. And then it's like, don't worry about it anymore. We've done our bit. We brought it up. Now back to throwing the shield around all these trees. Here we go.
Yeah. Speaking of our youth, Dave already called this out on our Discord. This is a perk for our Patreon supporters, patreon.com/extrahotgreat. But another way this struck straight at my heart is the moment when Kamala lashes out at her parents for ruining her fun with their enthusiastic, yet not quite right attempt to join her in her fandom. And she has that moment of realizing she really hurt their feelings, especially her dad. This is another go-to in stories about teens, that shame that you feel when you're like, oh, I really fucked up. But there's a reason it always works. Dave, talk about why you called that out on our Discord.
Oh, God. Okay. So, everybody remembers the first time they were the villain of a story. When you come to self-realization. Yeah, absolutely. When I was a kid, the sport that everybody in the neighborhood played was soccer because it's a cheap, equipment-free way to get into sports in your community. So we got signed up for whatever the local league was played. And I was pretty decent at soccer, which is surprising because I feel like I am really bad at all sports. But for some reason, soccer, I was good at. And my parents would usually come to the games. Like, I started playing when I was 6 or so, all the way up to early teens. And they would come. And then, like, my mom got into it a lot. Like, she wasn't the scary, like, bad parent cussing out the referee. But she was just, like, uber fan, right? Mm-hmm. Yelling a lot.
She just loved you too much, Dave.
She did. And then, like, one day I would go to my mom's, like, you know, maybe you could not be so loud on the sidelines when you do everything. And you just, I just saw like her face fall, you know, just the sadness just like come over her whole expression. And she's like, all right, fine. I guess I just won't come. And I'm like, oh shit. What did I just do? I just did not see that coming. I did not put the A to B sequence together for that. And she didn't come for like, I don't know, a couple months. So I had to find my way there, play, come back. And it was just like really awkward for a while in her house. And I still, like right now, I'm like, mm-hmm. You know, God bless her. But oh my God, I just feel bad still. And so that scene where Hulk Dad said, rang really true to me. And I thought they did a good job of capturing those really sort of bookmark moments that you have to go through when you're a teen.
Yeah.
I also think that, like, there was something beautiful in that scene, not just from, like, that awkward, like, oh, crap, I'm the villain of this story moment, but also just hearing her mom talk about the Avengers. Like, it reminds me of my mom talking about, like, now talking about the Avengers, because she doesn't use the right words, and she uses Aww. Spanish in it, too, and, like... And so hearing her say like Choti Hulk, like little Hulk, like that's adorable. And like it felt very authentic. It felt like an exchange that a family who is multilingual, who doesn't really understand what their daughter is doing, but trying to bridge that gap would do. And like I've had those things with my mom. Also have been in the situation where like my mom has done that in front of friends. And I've been like, oh my God, mom, why are you doing this? Like, you need to stop. And then she's just like, they can find their own way home and like just leaves. But like, I feel like that was the heart of it for me. Cause I think that was going to be the important piece, because Disney does not do well with multilingual stuff. Mm-hmm. It sucked in Doctor Strange. It was awful. There was no reason to speak Spanish. It made me angry. So I did not know how they were going to work in a way that felt lived in. And I think that they did nail it. And I think that that's something that like, I didn't trust, but it was done very well.
Yeah. Also, the mom's twist on the costume also gives her an idea of how to make her own Captain Marvel costume personal as well, not just with the bangles, although obviously that's part of it. So let's talk about her power since you brought it up, Kate. What did we see? How is it different from the comics character?
Everything. Everything's different from the comics character. So in the comics, Kamala Khan is an Inhuman. She ends a similar situation. She goes out when she's not supposed to go out. She ends up being encased by Terrigen Mist. She becomes an Inhuman and she realizes that she's a polymorph. So while Reed Richards can stretch his body, Kamala Khan can change her entire body. She can change what she looks like. She can make herself bigger, smaller, whatever. In Kamala's case, when this happens and she's scared, she needs to save Zoe, but she doesn't trust to do it herself. So in the comics, she transforms herself into a version of Miss Marvel. Blonde hair, skimpy outfit, like everything. Mm-hmm. And it's the moment where you see that this is what she believes a hero is. And right. It's what starkly marks her journey of understanding that she doesn't have to be blonde haired and blue eyed to be a hero. She can just be the brown girl from Jersey City, which kind of gets mentioned a little bit when we hear talks. And so that is what it was. What it is now is she has a cosmic bangle. She goes pew pew. It's frustrating.
Yeah.
In like really weird CGI. Like it didn't land.
I wasn't even sure what we were looking at.
Like, there was a character for the marketing for the original PlayStation that was super terrible called Polygon Man. Look it up, Google it. PlayStation marketing Polygon Man. And basically looked like Polygon Man was infecting her hand. It was very sort of like, you know, amethyst geode jewel hand effect. It was, yeah, it was weird. It didn't really, didn't work for me. Sort of self-discovery element that they're missing with the changes they made. The question then for me is, who is Nani in this universe then? Who is the grandmother that sent her the magic bracelet? For whatever reason, mom wasn't good enough, so we'll give it to the granddaughter and you know, whatever legacy here. See, we get like a small little nugget of what the bracelet's history was when she like falls back, and there's like this mysterious little scene with a whole bunch of glowing eyes and a whole bunch of, like an army or something behind her. So it'll be interesting to see what that is. But I feel like I am with Kate here. I feel like they did a disservice to her story as far as like her identity versus what the universe, our universe has been pitching as this is the superhero archetype and how are you going to fit into it?
You can tell that they're trying to deal with a lot of like the Islamophobia and racism, or potentially deal with it by making her powers come from something that situates her in a history that's larger than herself.
Right.
I hate that with all of my heart, because like the dynamic in the comic is literally a Pakistani American girl, because the hyphen is important.
Right.
She's not Pakistani. She's Pakistani American. Mm-hmm. And that is a very specific piece of identity where like, yeah, you understand that you're part of a bigger piece, but like here, I'm here now. I'm dealing with different situations. I don't have to see my entire lineage behind me to know that I'm enough. And I think I say that like as a brown girl, a different type of brown, but a brown girl who has had to realize that, oh yeah, it's okay to let my skin get dark in the summer. Oh, it's okay to do these things. It is such a misstep to like it. And this is where I say it gets white gazy.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, in order to make this brown character valid, they must now be situated in a long lineage of everything. It couldn't just be, oh, she learns that she's actually good enough by leaning on her parents and reading the Quran, because that's what happens in the comics.
Yeah.
And it's just really hard, and I can't get over it. I can't. I see that they're going to try, but it's an uphill push.
It feels a little bit like, you know, how do we inject our notion of nobility into her past in order to sell it to to middle America, I suppose.
Yeah, and this is a critique that Shang-Chi also got for in a lot of the same respects, like where it's, you know, it's a mystical sword. It's like, okay. there's other experiences that people have who are Asian American, as you say, the hyphen is important.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like we should give you the last word. What do people most need to know about this show going forward?
And is it that I went down a rat hole when I saw what I assumed was an Easter egg with the Edison electric sign. Mm. And then I discovered that there was a version of Edison in the comics that was actually a sort of mishap fly cloning. And he's half a cockatiel. What? And he creates cyborg alligators that roam the sewers. Is it that?
No. I will say I am hard on the show because Kamala Khan means a lot to me, and I got to talk to Bessie Austenite, who this character is meant a lot to. And so like I detaching myself from that is very hard. However, I think if you go into it understanding that you're getting a very YA story and that is the audience, and you don't have any prior knowledge of who she is, I think you can go into the story and get a lot out of it and get that sweetness and that charm in a way that we haven't necessarily seen in the MCU, because I would argue Spider-Man doesn't even really have that. And you get in that, go in knowing that that's what you're getting, and I think you'll be very happy with it. Iman is amazing. Like, she is just joy and like endearing, and I wanted to succeed for her. I just wish they had given her Kamala's actual story.
All right, it's time to go around the dial. We'll start with Tara. What do you got, Tara?
Well, I intentionally did not start The Real World Homecoming New Orleans until after I had talked about the original New Orleans season of The Real World in our last episode. And I figured I would not be talking about Homecoming for a few more weeks because it would take me a while to watch it. But then I watched 8 episodes in 2 weeknights. Whoops. This is the first season where all 7 of the original cast members spent time together in the same place. In the New York season, Eric participated in a limited way because he got COVID. And then Becky left practically as soon as she arrived because people were confronting her about her unconscious racial biases, and she did not like it. For the Los Angeles season, they did have 7 participants, but only because that season had a total of 9 roommates, so the number still added up, even though Dominic and that other boring blonde guy didn't want to do it. I had to look him up. Aaron? Anyway, New Orleans. I don't want to spoil anything big because it really is great TV. Everyone should watch it. I will say generally, it is fascinating to watch this cast interact with each other because it's very clear a bunch of them have had pretty extensive therapy, and it is not the people who probably need to work on themselves the most. There is a lot of talk about trauma getting reignited, defining and enforcing boundaries, and staying present in my body. That's a quote. And I respect how mentally healthy, let's say, four of these people really are, considering what they went through. This also means there aren't any huge fights, per se, just pointed but calm confrontations that are still very compelling. So the people, the rest, Matt apparently felt that everything he believed as an extremely rigid Catholic youth was just fine and did not require any interrogation because he has not really evolved at all on any of his thinking. Tokyo, formerly known as David, is the hardest to pin down. Something happens in the house fairly early on that kind of fucks him up in a way that's very understandable. Like, if that had been the catalyst for him leaving early, everyone inside and outside the house would understand. He doesn't. He stays. But, well, he doesn't share a lot about his life, other than that he's an artist working in the media of collage and manga, hence the name. We can't know whether he would have opened up more, if not for, I'll just say it, a shitty thing Julie did. I am definitely on his side there, would be on his side more in general if not for his style affectations. He walks around Chicago and sits for his one-on-one show interviews in a vintage marching band uniform jacket, for example, and also wears chunky black eyeglass frames without glass in them, and I can't support that, but I support him other than that. Finally, Julie. I don't want to say anything about her journey on this show because everyone should have the opportunity to encounter it without preconceptions. But A, she arrives with so many pairs of wildly hideous leggings, I am forced to wonder whether she sells LuLaRoe now. And B, oh my God, what a shithead. Obviously, I know reality TV cannot exist without the participation of assholes who have no self-awareness, but we get some evidence she does have self-awareness and yet is still like this. And according to Instagram posts by Kelly, after the finale aired, the edit that we saw barely scratches the surface of how inappropriate Julie actually was. And a lot of it did not get on screen. So other than that, because I would have liked to see the reactions, fantastic season, no notes. The next one's really going to have some work to do to top this one. Holy shit. Kate, did you watch it? You were reacting a lot.
So I watched New York and I think Los Angeles, half of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And I haven't made it to New Orleans. I'm just like,
It's real good.
This is going to be good.
So I have a lot to plug this week. I did a special episode of the Vanity Fair podcast, Little Gold Men, with our past guest of this podcast, LaToya Ferguson. We talked about Dope Sick, and I interviewed Danny Strong, who created the show. Over there, we'll link that. I reviewed season 3 of For All Mankind for Vanity Fair. We'll link that too. And I got to make my debut at thedailybeast.com writing about Borgen and how the new season, Borgen Power and Glory, really captures the current moment of media and politics and all their shittiness. So we will link all of those things in the show notes for you to enjoy.
All right, Kate, what do you have for us today?
So I wanted to talk about First Kill. It's a Netflix original vampire show, vampire versus vampire hunter show that is essentially Romeo and Juliet. And I say this because while Twilight is kind of that, this show goes hard with actually using lines from Romeo and Juliet in narration consistently. And I don't think badly, like you actually get to see how both characters kind of react to the lines and it drives the story. So it was like Romeo and Juliet plus Twilight, a little bit of Buffy fan service, and like a whole bunch of like the weird toxic dynamics from Vampire Diaries. And that's First Kill. Oh, and it's queer, which is like also really awesome. The show itself is not good, but it's not good in like the trashy YA way that makes it something that you put on and watch. Mm-hmm. In the same way that I've watched like however many series of Vampire Diaries there are multiple times. Like, it knows what it is. I think the standout of this show is, especially if you, because this is YA, so it's leaning at teens, older teens. It's a really good story to see for queer teens in that this isn't a story about a traumatic coming out and nobody stresses about how, like, everybody is very focused that it is a vampire and a vampire hunter that love each other. Nobody cares that they're both teenage girls. They're like, that's just a part of who they are and a part of the show. And I think to see that sort of romantic dynamic displayed in a way that is so normal, like there's no giant talks about it, there's no pain associated with their queerness, which I think is something that we don't get a lot of in any sort of like queer YA romance. It's like it has some of the sweetness of Heartstopper with like the angsty vampire-ness that you expect from moody teenage vampires. So I enjoyed it. I believe my review on But Why Though was a 6. And that's just because the dialogue is really bad. And like the first few episodes are really bad. And like the finale CG is really bad. But like there's a whole bunch of good in the middle that I really enjoyed. So yeah, that was First Kill. And I'm realizing now I probably should have talked about Physical because nobody talks about Physical.
I've been watching it. Talk about Physical.
It's amazing. Yeah. Like I reviewed season 2 over at But Why Though, and it is, I can't wait for people get to the back half of the season, because for me, I have never seen bulimia showcased in the way that it is on this show. So like I've been very open. I've written a lot of articles about my own struggles with eating disorders. I was diagnosed with bulimia, God, 16 years ago now, 16, 17 years ago now. So over half my life. And it is something that stays with you. But when you see these types of stories, it is always a teen. It is always somebody in their early 20s. It's never a full grown adult with adult things and showcasing the fact that this is like a trigger that is deeply rooted in anxiety and control. And for me, it was really powerful to see it showcased like that in the first season. And then in the second season, what we're getting to see is her deal with it in unhealthy ways, but ultimately understanding that piece of herself and stop holding it all in mm-hmm. and start actually letting it out. I can't reveal a lot of stuff from the back half,
yeah.
But like it just gets better. And Rose Byrne is phenomenal.
She's incredible.
Yeah. So Physical, that it's amazing. I really want people to watch that show. Like Apple TV Plus puts out bangers and more people need to watch them.
I agree.
I reviewed First Kill. That's on there. I reviewed Good Luck to You, Leo Grand. That's coming out this Friday. Phenomenal show. I also reviewed Our Blues, which is a K-drama on Netflix that's really good. And that's kind of all I've really done. I have a lot of like some stuff's in the works, but they're all embargoed and I can't talk about them.
All right. So. We'll link to your author page and people can find all your ratings from there.
All right. Coming up on the Extra Hot Great Cinematic Universe on the next Extra, Extra Hot Great for our Patreon supporters, it is More New Tricks. Based off the British show New Tricks, we are assembling crews of retired detectives to solve murders. How will they work together? Are they going to work? Or did Dave just collect a whole bunch of people again to sow chaos in TV land? Check that out this Friday. Go to patreon.com/extrahotgreat to join in on the action. And then next week, right here on EHG Prime, it is The Old Man with guest Dave Chen. Yes, Dave Chen of the Chen Check-In, or as he calls it, the Me Check-In. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is Tara. Take it away, Tara.
Hello.
Hello.
Because it is on Starz, a pay cable network that still isn't really known for its original series, possibly because sometimes it only puts up one season of a show that it owns, which is the case here. What the fuck, Starz? I started screaming about Vita when it premiered in the late spring of 2018. It is the story of sisters Emma and Lynn Hernandez, who returned to their childhood home in the East LA neighborhood of Boyle Heights after the death of their mother, Vidalia, Vita for short. In the series premiere, they're confused about why Eddie, Vita's butch female boarder, is being so warm to them, but before long find out that Eddie and Vita had been married. Given that Vita had previously been married to the girl's father, the news of her later in life same-sex marriage is a shock to her daughters. It's also extremely galling to Emma, who dated a girl as a teen, leading Vita to remove her from their home when she found out about the relationship. So Vita has left her estate, a building containing the bar that she ran with apartments above it, to be split three ways among her daughters and Eddie, which is complicated because A, Vita borrowed against the building, B, the neighborhood is in the process of gentrifying, so developers are circling, and C, Emma has determined that the will Eddie and Vita made online probably is not legally enforceable. By the end of the first season, Emma and Lynn have resolved to stay in Los Angeles and try to make the bar, which they renamed Vita, into a viable business. Fun! Except Vita was clearly in denial about a lot of shit she didn't have the money to deal with. So in nearly every episode, Emma finds out about some new catastrophe she's going to have to pay for, and what started out as 6 months worth of runway keeps getting shorter and shorter. In episode 12, Emma finds out that Lynn has bought more than $14,000 worth of clothes with their dead mother's credit card, and that's where we're picking up in the episode we'll be discussing today, season 2, episode 7, titled episode 13 for its position in the series run. Let's talk about what I think makes this episode a canon contender. Number one, it's rich with sister conflict. Emma and Lynn have a classic older, younger child dynamic. Emma is a hard-charging type A. The reason she even has 6 months worth of runway to spend or squander on the bar is that when Vita died, Emma was a successful business consultant. Lynn seems to have been drifting through life as a trophy girlfriend to a series of financially comfortable men. And why not? She is stunning. We frequently see her naked. I'm pretty sure her show wardrobe contains zero bras. To shorthand them, when they were kids, Emma was in spelling bees and Lynn was in child beauty pageants. Lynn's season 2 arc has been about her desire to prove to Emma that she can be an asset in the business and that she will no longer personally be a drain on Emma's energy and finances. The scandalous credit card debt is a huge setback for their relationship. Nico, Emma's new consulting bartender slash crush, tries to put Lynn's recklessness in context. Clip 1.
Bottled up grief makes people do some shady shit. Lynn just... probably just not thinking straight after your mom died.
No, this is just Lynn. Dead mother or not, she doesn't think she's causing a shitstorm until it blows back on everyone else.
Lynn is relieved when Emma returns to the apartment and coldly tells her that she will help pay off the debt, thus embroiling herself in Lynn's criminal fraud, but at the same time making Lynn beholden to her so that Emma can remain the winning sister, despite there no longer being any parents around whose favor either of them is trying to secure. And now, in addition to all the stresses inherent in setting the business back up, its three principals aren't really working with or even talking to one another, and we will get to Eddie's role in this battle in a second. Number 2, it weaves in Mexican mysticism. Despite its Irish-ass name, Boyle Heights is a traditionally Latinx community. It's the fifth largest Latinx neighborhood in Los Angeles, with 94% of residents of Latinx ancestry. One of the ways that Vita honors the neighborhood is by portraying its traditions, which include brujería. Apologies for my bad accent. I know French, not Spanish. Spiritual guidance and healing. Conveniently, Doña Lupe is a tenant in the Hernandez building and a practitioner. Inconveniently, she occasionally offers afterlife updates from the late Vita that the girls aren't that excited to hear. In this episode, Lynn seeks out Doña Lupe in the hopes that the spirits will know where Emma is. Instead, Lupe diagnoses Lynn's problem. Clip 2.
You did a very bad thing.
Technically, but, like, not really.
No, nada de technically. Aquí está muy clarito.
I'm going to pay it all back.
I think you don't see. You don't see you're ugly. You think your actions aren't part of you, but they are. And they are your ugly.
So now I'm ugly?
Yes.
See? I always think you're going to tell me something that's actually useful.
I always tell you something useful. That you never know how to use it is otra cosa. Emma is not mad. She feels betrayed. You disappointed her.
Disappointed is so much worse than mad.
Just let her be, and you'll find the time to make it right. Pero tú, mija, you have to do something.
About how horrible and ugly I am?
Yes. You are not horrible, but you are not seeing your real self and how your actions affect people. So this is what I want you to do. Make a bath and pour mucha sal into the water. You get in and you take a mirror and you look at yourself. Pero really look deep into yourself. And then you tell yourself all the bad things that you are.
Great.
And you trap them all in there. Then you break the mirror. But you never look at the broken pieces because then you'll trap yourself in there too.
Lynn rejects Lupe's prescription at first, but by the end of the episode, she's alone in the tub, smearing off her makeup and taking a long, very hard look at herself. She doesn't go through the whole ritual as ordered, but when she does accidentally break the mirror as she's setting it down, she can't help looking. Will Lynn remain trapped in the mirror and in her worst impulses? Speaking of Lynn's worst impulses, let's go on to my next point, number 3. It delves into the crises of gentrification. Because he was snarled up in Vita's debt before she died, local real estate developer Nelson continues to irritate the Hernandez sisters in greater and lesser ways. He makes Emma a shitty lowball offer on the building in the middle of a business meeting. He paws her. He sneaks into the bar when no one's around and alerts the fire department about a very expensive issue with the electrical panel. When Lynn goes straight from Lupe's to seek comfort from her new neighbor, Marcos, they end up talking about colorism in the community. Turns out Marcos's sister was rejected by some smarmy Latino real estate guy for being too dark-skinned for his taste. Marcos still has screenshots of the texts from the offender, and of course, it is Nelson. Lynn decides to catfish him on a dating app, creating a profile for Summer, a very white, very blonde spin-slash-hatha yoga instructor. In other words, a total cliche of the sort Lynn and Marcos think Nelson will find irresistible. Clip 3.
I'm really into Mexican guys that can teach me how to salsa. White girls love to salsa dance.
Don't they even get that Mexicans eat salsa, not dance it?
Oh, the main caption. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
I hate playing head games unless they involve my mouth.
Yes, yes!
Sure enough, seconds after Summer has swiped right on Nelson, they're matched, and a text conversation ensues. Clip 4.
I'm Hispanic, slim, and a lead project manager at a development company on the east side. We turned these dog shit infested streets into something palatable for the upwardly mobile incomers.
Did he answer the why he doesn't date Latinas question?
Oh, yeah. Listen to this douchebag. Not really. I prefer pink nipples.
We will not.
Oh, my God.
We don't hear much of what Summer has to say in response, but Nelson evidently feels sufficiently encouraged to send a dick pic, which before the end of the episode, Lynn has printed out along with the incriminating texts and plastered all over his office building. At the same time, Emma is considering a low-effort way the bar can make some money. A friend of Nico's works in marketing, placing billboards on walls with high visibility. The bar has one, but the decision is more complicated than it originally seemed. Clip 5.
Wait, you don't use some sort of vinyl decal to cover up the existing artwork?
No. No, it's all hand-painted. See?
I thought it was going to be one of those framed billboards.
Is that how you always do it? I seem to remember some sort of overlay. You
did. Not on brick. And a small billboard would be wasted on this wall. This would be painted.
I'm sorry, I didn't fully put together that we'd lose this mural.
This would be great placement. We've been wanting to get into the Bohi market for a while now.
Bohi? What is Bohi? Oh, is that you trying to say Boyle Heights?
Can you send me some more samples of painted ads? I promise to let you know first thing Monday.
Of course.
Yeah. Have you seen the fuck white art thing in the news? That was right around La Esquina. Oh, sorry. Corner.
Eddie, can we please...
Oh, don't you think it's a little irresponsible of us to not warn him about the anti-gentrification movement going on in this neighborhood?
I'll be in touch tomorrow.
No, she will not be in touch tomorrow because one of her business partners, that's me, is not going to let this happen. Do you know that that's you, Emma? That she had you and Lynn painted there?
There seems to be a discrepancy with how to proceed.
Yeah, let me walk Kelly to his car, and when we get sorted out, we can give him a call back.
And who made you the grand poobah around here? You have no right to stick your nose where it don't belong.
No, Eddie, you're the one that doesn't have the right here. You don't get to say a goddamn thing about this building because as far as I know, you have no legal right here. You are not legally married to my mother, and that sham of a will you two made is totally invalid. So, unless you can produce some cash, you're gonna have to let Kelly and I talk business. Understood?
It's obvious that in a perfect world, Emma wouldn't willingly cover her mother's mural with a shitty beer ad, but they're not in a perfect world. They're in Bohi in 2019. Receipts from the bar's few rapidly aging regulars already aren't enough to keep the place open longer than a few months, never mind paying off Lynn's debt. Nelson might be temporarily embarrassed by the leak of his dick pic and his plans to chase out less affluent residents whose families may have lived in the neighborhood for generations, but his shame won't actually alter any of his plans. The grassroots activists in Mari's group, Vigilantes de Los Angeles, are organizing to disrupt gentrification efforts, but are probably, at best, just slowing them down. Emma and Lynn, having actually grown up in the community, may be more palatable landlords and business owners in the long run than true outsiders, even if Lynn and Emma keep getting mistaken for opportunistic newcomers. But Lynn, and especially Emma, can't operate their business the way they might prefer to. The pressures of capitalism force them into hideous compromises. Fourth and finally, it depicts how old values persist in the older generation and the harm that results. In the show's first season, Mari, who until recently worked 3 paying jobs as well as 4th and 5th unpaid jobs as a community activist and her father's home healthcare assistant, was socially destroyed by the revelation that her quasi-boyfriend, Tlaloc, had secretly taken video of her while she was giving him a blowjob. I could write a graduate thesis on the genius depiction of this trifler and the way he's weaponized political buzzwords to prey on leftist women, having him purr to Mari about how seriously he takes consent after having made this video was particularly rich. But that's not the point. The clip has made its way to Mari's brother, Johnny, and while violence is never appropriate, I'm not super mad seeing the damage Johnny visits on Tlaloc's stupid face. Unfortunately, Mari is still so dickmatized by a guy she isn't even confident calling her boyfriend that she takes his side and is yelling at Johnny in front of their house when their dad comes out. Neither Mari nor Johnny thinks fast enough to come up with another video to show him when he demands to see it, and their dad kicks Mari out of the house on the spot. Later, Johnny goes by the bar to try to drop off some clothes for Mari, and Emma overhears. Emma can be hard to like, but I appreciate that when she learns that Johnny's partly to blame for Mari's excommunication from the family, she looks like she's about to fuck up Johnny's face worse than he did Tlaloc's. Anyway, Mari comes by Emma's later to get her last check from a short-term gig nursing Eddie. When it's clear that Mari doesn't know where she's going to stay that night, Emma briskly says she'll be staying there. Emma has a fraught past with the Hernandez sisters. Lynn, Johnny's long-ago ex, started sleeping with him again when she came back to town and broke up Johnny's relationship with his pregnant fiancé. Mari verbally assaulted Emma on the steps of a gentrified Airbnb, which ended with them both getting arrested and Emma bailing Mari out. Given all this, Mari tearfully tries not to accept Emma's help now that she's homeless. But Mari's best friend is practically homeless herself, and Tlaloc wants nothing to do with her, so Mari can't really decline. A decade after Emma did, a girl in the neighborhood can still lose everything by getting caught having sex. There was no one around and Emma's youth to step in and keep her from being sent away, so it's lucky for Mari that Emma can step up and be that person for her. A capitalist like Emma might disdain the word mutual aid, but if she keeps up this kind of behavior, she'll end up a vigilante organizer herself. Episode 13 lacks one element that is present in virtually every other Vita episode. Joyful, consensual, life-affirming sex, often queer and often involving people who are heavier or hairier than are generally portrayed getting down on screen. And yes, I wish someone had decided to edit out the "I think I just threw up a little in my mouth" joke. I mean, yes, Lynn, the one who delivers it, is kind of basic, but still in the timeline of this episode, it's 2019. But Vita was a great show because it addressed topics I rarely saw anywhere else in culture, and episode 13 lets them intersect in thrilling, infuriating, moving ways that demonstrate what made the series such a gem. I hope you will agree and induct it into the canon.
Thank you, Tara. All right, Kate, do you want to take a first crack at talking about the episode and Tara's presentation?
Yeah, I mean, I've been in love with Vita since it came out. It's one of my favorite shows, and it's one of the most authentic shows. It's something that I don't just see like the good things about my culture, and I see all the ugly too. And that was one of its strengths. And I think this episode really captures it. And I think specifically when you look at the acknowledgement of colorism, that's actually something that could be lodged against the show itself, because it doesn't feature any Afro-Latinos really prominently until you get to the third season. And even then it's really scarce. And I think that the showrunner, Tania Saracho, she was very aware of that all. And so for me, I think this episode really does a good piece of not just being a good tension drama pusher for like the narrative, but also like just hanging out all of like the Mexican community sins to just kind of like be there. You have like the extended machismo, the people who forget who they are. You have all of it. And I think that is beautiful in its own way. Also, there has been a rise in showcasing curanderismo, that is Mexican faith healing, brujería and curanderismo go hand in hand, but there is a really beautiful look at the role that a curandera plays in a community that I don't think a lot of people really understand. They're nurturers, they're advice givers. They're not just these like magic women, and a lot of Latinas don't see them that way. And that is because my great grandmother was a curandera, and you see a lot of like the practices like handed down. So like my mom made me do a mirror thing, and the idea is that like you get stuck in your porqueria, your filth, and you like, until you do it again and you can have like the self-reflection to not look back. Like that's just kind of what it is. It's like, Anyway, it's captured really beautiful. And there's one small thing that is so well done. In the conversation Nelson has, he calls himself Hispanic. Mm. That actually holds a lot of weight, because most of the time when people call themselves Hispanic and they're not of like the boomer generation, like, and they are in the position that he is, it's because you're situating yourself closer to your Spaniard heritage than your indigenous heritage. So, and that's why you see Lynn using Latina instead of Hispanic, because right. they're two different concepts. One was created by the U.S. government. One is embraced by the community. And so like that small word choice shows how detail oriented and community oriented this show's storytelling is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I would induct it into canon. It's one of my favorite episodes of the show. And I think that it shows a dynamic look at life in a Mexican community in a way that you really don't see other places.
Okay, go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I will say, just on a lighter note, hey, Sideshow Bob is a great way to start a fight.
Yes.
I think the show did a really good job of highlighting a lot of issues, obviously, in the community in a very side-loaded kind of way, to borrow a term from cell phones and stuff like that, which is like, you know, there's the home insecurity plot where, you know, you're just one moment away from not having a place to sleep. Like, it is a storyline about the blowjob tape, but suddenly there's this whole question of like, on a turn of a dime, I don't know where I'm going to be tonight. And along those lines, one thing that I was surprised at that I learned from this episode, and I'm not going to try to pronounce the Spanish because I'm terrible at that, but the line that when they're talking about the Tinder plot, and he says his racist grandmother, I think, or aunt says, you know, would say improve the race in regards to finding a white guy or girl to go out with, to marry. And I like actually had to look it up, because the way it's presented in the show, I'm like, I can't be right. And because you're still used to the storyline being something like, in the Jewish community, make sure you marry Jewish.
Well, the way it's specifically used there, it's very specifically saying no black people. That's what it means. It doesn't mean no Mexicans. It means no black Mexicans.
Okay.
I have dated light-skinned Mexican men whose grandmothers have said that about me.
Right.
Because if we had had kids, my brownness would come up. So it's actually not always about dating outside. It's about, no, you don't date somebody who can make your kids darker.
Right.
Because if your kids are darker, you are actually hurting our race by making more dark.
It's like
ones.
The world's worst Pantone color book.
Yes. Exactly.
And they're like, they come up to you, they've got their chits and they're putting it right next. It's like, I don't know.
Well, that's a cop thing too, which is like the brown paper bag test.
Yep.
So yeah, you learn something new every day.
And something awful.
Yeah, something awful. Every culture has it.
You know, all the little touches, you know, Bohi and all that sort of stuff. Like, it really does a really good job of painting a picture, whether you are immersed in the culture or whether you're on the outside looking in. You know, I grew up in a super white neighborhood up in Canada. I literally did not have a fellow student of color until university. Like, that's how crazy white the neighborhood I lived in is. So I appreciate a show like this and watching it and learning all these bits of the culture, good and bad, which is like a great thing about this show, which is it is even-handed. I'm not quite sure how to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Before we vote, I just wanted to add that since I wrote this, I got to interview Tania Saracho and Gladys Rodriguez, who wrote this episode at the ATX Festival a couple of years ago. And they were both great. They have fans for life. I will follow them wherever they go next. So I'm excited to see what projects they have on the horizon.
I got to interview her at the end of season 3.
Mm-hmm.
She's just an amazing woman.
She's like so great.
There's just like a joy and care. Mm-hmm. Like a deep care that you just get from talking to her.
Yeah.
Like, she's amazing.
And she was so passionate about like elevating other, especially women, but just people who are otherwise marginalized in showbiz, because it's so, it can be so much cronyism. So it was very important to her to elevate like writers and directors and music supervisors and of color on the production.
Yeah.
All right, let's put this to the official vote. Kate, what do you say, you? Canon worthy or not?
Canon worthy.
Me too. All Yay. Right, so that means...
Shh.
Bat Vita's Season 2, Episode 7. Nope. Yep. This already confused me. Season 2, Episode 7. Episode 13. You hereby talk to the extra hot, right? Get it?
Yep.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it is time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Tara has this week's winner.
Yeah, American Rest got canceled at Showtime, but it is getting a second season at Freevee. And I have no opinion on American Rest. I did not watch it. But occasionally a show comes across your consciousness and you realize that this is some UBA Plus shit. To refer to
from the morning show
just a show, a description and a title where you're just like, someone took 2 seconds to make this up, and yet somehow this one is real. This is what American Rest is about. American Rest is a compelling family drama and a timeless story told through the eyes of complicated and compromised Chief of Police Del Harris, Jeff Daniels, of a Pennsylvania Rust Belt town full of good people making bad choices. Wow, that is some first thought TV creation, but I guess it's based on a book, whatever. Congratulations to American Rest. I will continue to not watch it on Freevee.
And Loser Week is Amy Schumer. And this is why Procter & Gamble is blaming her for the current national tampon shortage that we are all experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
Procter & Gamble spokeswoman Sherry McMaster told Time magazine that since Amy's commercials have come out, retail sales growth has exploded. And apparently the line they're drawing is that the commercials let women know that tampons come in different sizes. And American women are like, holy shit, I got to get me some of the right size. And they all went out and bought a whole bunch of tampons. And now nobody can have any tampons. Like, I like to buy tampons just to have around because they're very absorbent. And I had to, like, change to paper towels. And it's been miserable for me. Mm-hmm. Amy Schumer, apparently, is America's greatest villain.
Yeah. Speaking of American's greatest villain, do you know what time it is?
Is it game time?
Sort of. It's not regulation game time. Today's non-regulation game time, which is means coming between seasons and Dave gets to play, is called Your Honorifics. Jumping off from the title of Ms. Marvel, our lead topic this week, this game is all about TV show titles that could also be people's titles. Okay. We're talking Ms., Mr., Miss, Mrs., of course, also potentially Lord, Lady, Sir, Rabbi, Sister, Father, etc. I will give you the show description. You tell me the title for 2 points. If you need a hint, I'll give you the name of one of the show's stars, and then the correct answer is worth 1 point. For example, this animated series about the misadventures of a remarkably short-sighted gentleman has really not aged well. What show am I looking for?
Mr. Magoo.
That's correct. So some of these titles might not be names. They might just start with a word or sound of an honorific. For example, if we were including movies, The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, because sister.
Got it.
So in those cases, there may be a the involved that you can just ignore. So I will let you get us at each level. It's non-regulation game time. Who cares? Let us throw it to Picky to see who's going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. So our order, short and sweet. Kate. Then Dave, are you ready to play Your Honorifics?
Yes. Good luck, Kate.
I'm realizing the Rolodex of movies and titles that sound like that is very little in my head. Let's go.
Let's see. This BBC sci-fi series revolves around a time-traveling alien and his various companions.
Okay, that's easy. Doctor Who.
Doctor Who is correct for 2 points. It's not hard. These are all ones that, like, I didn't have to look up what they were about in order to write it, so... Dave, this recently canceled NBC sitcom had a much shorter life than its star's previous show, a multiple Emmy nominee.
Is this Mr. Mayor?
It is Mr. Mayor, the Ted Danson show. Back to Kate. In this Disney Plus series, several genius children are handpicked to infiltrate a boarding school run by a shadowy villain.
Oh my God, what is it called?
Yeah, what is it called, Dave? It was the lead topic of this podcast.
I know, that's why I'm like, oh boy, Dave.
Oh, hands.
Tony Hale is one of the stars of this show.
God, how old am I? I don't have the faintest idea.
Okay. Dave, do you remember what this one was called?
It's the Something Society
Yes.
Something.
The Mysterious Benedict Society.
Mysterious.
So this is one of the first ones of those with Mysterious. Back to you, Dave. This TLC reality show takes you closer to various horrifying skin afflictions than most people would ever want to get.
Sure. Okay. this is... It is called Dr. Pimple Popper.
Correct.
That's it? Okay.
Good. That's it. Dr. Pimple, the Dr. Pimple Popper Society. No.
Well, I wasn't sure. Dr. Pimple Popper colon, you know, Rita whatever, or right. Dr. Pimple Popper MD.
No, you got it.
It's like House. I never know whether to call it House or House MD. What is it? Make up your mind, Internet.
Back to Kate. Oprah is responsible for foisting not just this syndicated talk show's host on us, but also his sons.
There are two options. I don't know which one has kids.
Let me ask you, Tara.
Yeah.
Is this one running for office currently?
I can't answer that.
Okay.
I don't want to know. I've already given her enough. I'm pretty sure one of them has not tried to nepotism his kids into anything. But the other one definitely
don't know enough about these men to know if they've
done it. You got it. You can ask for a hint. It might help.
You got 50-50.
Hints.
Robin McGraw.
There you go. McGraw.
Dr. Phil.
Dr. Phil is correct for one point. Back to you, Dave.
Okay.
This ITV sitcom features a mostly mute weirdo in a tie and tweed blazer.
This is, oh no. Mr. Bean.
Mr. Bean is correct.
What I said, I was going to say Mr. Fields, and I have no idea why.
Back to Kate.
Because I want a cookie.
While incarcerated, a group of juvenile offenders gain superpowers in this E4 sci-fi series.
Oh, Misfits?
Misfits is correct for 2 points.
Oh, wow.
Thank God you didn't make me say the one star's name that I know who was also in Game of Thrones. Very Welsh name. No idea. Dave.
Yes, ma'am.
Reportedly, filming once had to stop down on this ABC sitcom because its star sat on his balls.
Still my favorite little TV tidbit of the guy who sat on his own balls and stopped production. That is Mr. Belvedere.
That is Mr. Belvedere.
What?
Yeah. Oh, my God, Kate. You're in for a treat later tonight when Google Mr. Belvedere testicles.
All right, back to Kate. We'll give you each one more question and then do a score break. Kate, would you believe this talking horse sitcom was originally based on a series of short stories?
Let me just say, this show is barely on my consciousness given my age. And Kate is like she's 10, according to So good
That's
luck.
True, but I think it's still known as a pop culture reference.
Is it Mr. Ed?
It is Mr. Ed.
I just remember the peanut butter.
That's right. All right, Dave, your last question before our score break. This mystery series transports a classic pair of crime solvers to present day Japan.
What the hell? Say that again.
This mystery series transports a classic pair of crime solvers to present day Japan.
I see. But not like literally.
Also turns them ladies.
Yes, this is Miss Sherlock.
It is Miss Sherlock.
I got hung up that there was time travel in the actual show, which there is not.
Sorry to be confusing. All right, here are our scores. Kate, strong, 7 points. Dave is perfect so far with 10.
Yay.
Back to Kate. In this CBS drama, a politician rises through the ranks of government such that the series title no longer applies by the end.
Whoa. Can you read that again? I had my trouble wrapping my brain around that one.
In this CBS drama, a politician rises through the ranks of government such that the series title no longer applies to her by the end.
Oh, got it.
You can ask for a hint. Might help. Taya Leone.
CBS.
See, this is where her youth really comes into play. She knows Mr. Ed. She doesn't know CBS dramas.
Yeah.
What I'm learning is Kate was put in stasis for a few years.
Yeah, this show was on for a long time.
I mean, this show is just one of those, like, on forever under the radar CBS shows. Yeah. So there's no reason. There's no shame.
There's so many of them.
They all have the word blue or rookie or something like that.
Do you have a guess?
No.
Dave, what is that show?
Is this Madam Secretary?
It sure is Madam Secretary.
Oh my God. I don't know. So I was thinking about Madam President. I was like, that's not the
Commander in Chief is the one you're thinking of.
Exactly. That's right.
Yep.
Gina Davis. Yeah.
All right, Dave.
Yes.
The reason why I was so quick with that answer is because I made the exact same mistake that you were going towards. I answered Commander in Chief when I should have said Madam Secretary a little while ago.
Yeah. Dave.
Yeah.
It continues to be weird that a supporting player on this HBO sketch show was at the Capitol on January 6th, 2021.
Oh, sure. That's Mr. Show.
It is Mr. Show, sadly for us all.
Oh, God.
Kate.
It's a weird story.
In this USA drama, a troubled computer programmer is pushed into dangerous actions by a friend who may or may not exist.
I'm like running through like USA shows in my head. Mr. Robot?
It is Mr. Robot. Yeah. Good for 2 points. Back to Dave.
Mm-hmm.
A very dry psychiatrist treats comics in this animated Comedy Central series.
Oh, right. Squiggle Vision. What was that called? Dr. Katz. Professional therapist.
Correct. Kate.
MD.
No MD. Kate. An astronaut and his robot friends are forced to watch terrible movies, but that doesn't mean they can't joke through and over them.
Oh, Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Correct. Dave.
Yes.
The oft-mentioned spouse of a famously rumpled detective gets her own NBC spinoff.
Oh, right. Is this... I'm genuinely wondering if I'm going to answer incorrectly and that I created this idea in my mind at some point. But this is Mrs. Columbo?
It sure is Mrs. Okay. Columbo.
Oh my God, yeah. That sounds like a fever dream.
Who's Mrs. Columbo?
Kate Mulgrew.
Oh shit, that's right.
All right, you guys each have one question left, so I'm going to give you your scores. Kate has 11. Dave pretty much has sewn this up with 16. But let's play your last two questions anyway. Kate, the nicest, gentlest man ever is the titular star of this PBS kids show.
Yeah, Mr. Rogers.
I'll give you that. It's Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, but you know Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Oh, I had to add professional therapist to mine, but she doesn't have to. I see.
Dave, your final question.
Yes.
A female physician brings her talents to the frontier in this CBS period drama.
This is funny. This came up on a quiz I was playing yesterday for the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show.
Oh?
Yes. That is Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman.
It sure is.
MD.
Yes. So our final scores are Kate with 13 and Dave 100% perfect the whole way down. 18 points. Great job, Dave. Let's play the tiebreaker to try to win some steel meals for future games.
Okay.
Are you both ready? Shout it out when you know it.
Okay.
Players in this... Actually, let me finish the question.
Okay.
Players in this CBS reality show are challenged to outwit, outplay, and outlast their opponents.
Survivor.
Yeah, Kay got it.
I have watched all, like, 42 of those seasons.
Survivor.
Nice. Nicely done.
That means Dave is our victor today.
Dave.
Yay. Fun game. Thanks, Dar.
You're welcome.
Well, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We were giant hands-on for the premiere of Miss Marvel before going around the dial with stops at The Real World, First Kill, and Physical. We put episode 13 of Vita in the canon, and we crowned winners and losers of the week. And hey, look, it's me. I was the winner of this week's Game Time from Tara. Next up, it's retired detective teams on Extra, Extra Hot Great. And on the next EHG Prime, The Old Man. Remember.
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Shut up, Julie.
And Kay Sanchez.
One day I'll win a quiz on here.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Grit.
Oh, God, no. Can we please not do any of the creepy stuff right now? Just keep it Disney for me, okay?
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.